This is NBC Nightly News with Frank McGee in New York and in Washington, David Brinkley.
Good evening. The House voted today to kill the SST airplane by refusing to spend any more tax money to build it. The vote was close, 215 against spending the money and 204 in favor. Since the Senate voted last year to cut off the money, this most likely is the end of it. The argument continued down to the last. Backers of the plane said if the U.S. didn't build it, it would lose its lead in commercial aviation, would cause a loss of jobs in the aerospace industry, already in trouble. Opponents said it was a bad investment, would never be a commercial success, that a tiny fraction of the public would ever use it, that it might hurt the environment, that Washington was in the red already, and there were better places to spend the money. There were these comments from a winner and a loser.
It says to the White House that you ought to reassess your priorities. I think that it says that there are other programs that have greater validity for the American people than the SST.
I'm shocked and dismayed by the result, of course, because I think it means that the United States will be second best in many aspects of scientific and technological development. I think it means that the United States will be behind the Soviet Union and the British and the French in the development of commercial aircraft. I believe it's tragic from the point of view of the United States that we as a great country are going to be buying from foreign competitors instead of building and selling commercial aircraft.
Last year, before the election, the House voted on this same question, and then it voted yes, spend the money. After the election, 56 new members came in, and of these, 34 voted against the SST and 22 voted for it. So the election and the new members probably made the difference and changed the result. Another factor, the American people are beginning to complain loudly about spending money for various kinds of glittering, expensive hardware. And this piece of hardware, the SST, is not military. And so it was a chance for a congressman to vote against it without being accused of disarming the country, without having to tangle with the Pentagon's lobby, and without having his patriotism questioned.
This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, March 18th, 1971.
Should my boy be a doctor? Or an architect? Or maybe a professor? Whatever he picks, he'll need training. That's where New York Life is helping. This life insurance guarantees my guy will have cash for college. Talk it over with your New York Life agent. It sure makes the future look a lot happier. Right, Professor?
Right.
The Audi has the same type of steering system as the Ferrari racing car. You can hardly see the difference between the way the superb Mercedes-Benz looks and the way the Audi looks. The reason why the Audi gets the same kind of expert service as the Volkswagen is because Audi is a division of Volkswagen.
President Nixon, still trying to bring Congress around to his point of view on sharing revenue with the states, held out the fifth of six plums today, about $2.75 billion for transportation. Mr. Nixon told Congress the money could be spent for whatever method of transportation the community felt it most needed, buses, subways, airports, or even highways. Only about $500 million, however, would be available for immediate relief of mass transit systems. The remaining proposal the president plans to send to Congress on revenue sharing involves education. Also today, Transportation Secretary John Volpe told Congress that changes should be wrought in the automobile insurance system. But the states, not the federal government, he said, should bring about these changes. There is opposition to that in Congress.
Now, what is the philosophy that we're talking about here? You said that it's a question, early, you said it was a question of whether you want, if you move on a federal no-fault now, a question of dictating to the states. I would suggest that it's an assumption of responsibility which is ours in view of the record of the states. Ours meaning the federal.
if we are to preserve in this nation the federalism, the federal-state partnership, that unless the states refuse to act, that we should do everything we can to preserve that federal-state partnership, provide the guidance and the leadership to them to act, and then if they refuse to act, use the stick if that is necessary, and do everything possible in between to bring about a solution without waiting for additional thousands to be killed or additional thousands to be injured.
Your report suggests 5 years as a reasonable, but admittedly a very, has to be tentative, projection. What do you say to the 500,000 that will be seriously injured each of those years?
Most auto insurance companies fear no-fault insurance will prove more costly, increase competition, and bring more federal regulation. Richard J. Barber, who supervised a 2-year study for the Transportation Department, said Secretary Volpe really preferred a federal law, but was forced to back down after the White House bowed to industry pressure.
Today's recommendation, I feel, is a disgraceful sham. It is grossly inadequate to deal with a problem that the administration itself has labeled as one urgently in need of change and reform. The Secretary of Transportation and the Department of Transportation experts who worked on this study for more than 2 years urgently wanted to go to a much more far-reaching, more positive federal program. They were not allowed to do so because the White House, under intense industry pressure leading to meetings in the last several days at the White House, finally decided that the best thing to do was to duck the problem, postpone it, and pass it on. In short, leave it to the states.
In one area where federal responsibility, or a former one, has been turned over to the states, the results are less than heartening. Until recently, the federal government gave money to the states for the specific purpose of vaccinating children against various diseases. Then it stopped and gave the states the money with no strings attached. The result has been that vaccinations are down and diseases are up. Now it develops that the Nixon administration turned down money that Congress wanted to provide for the specific purpose of immunization.
There have been 12,000 cases of measles so far this year all over the United States, up from 7,000 cases at the same time last year. New outbreaks were reported today, and more are expected. Inoculations to prevent measles, diphtheria, and polio have fallen off since the federal government stopped giving the states money specifically for inoculations 2 years ago. Congress became alarmed last fall and offered HEW $75 million to give to the states for immunization. The Nixon administration turned it down. A Budget Bureau official said the money was not necessary or desirable. He said it ran counter to President Nixon's revenue-sharing program of giving the states health money in a lump sum to spend as they wished.
The HEW officials came over and opposed the bill.
Why?
Said it wasn't needed. Said they had plenty of authority to do this through the Partnership for Health Act, which our committee had passed earlier, which gives a lump sum amount of money to the state for health problems.
Do you believe that the money was not needed?
Well, of course not. Of course it is needed.
Why do you think HEW came here and said we don't need the money when the figures show that childhood diseases are going up, immunizations are going down?
I think it's a budget problem. I think the Office of Management and Budget is making too many of the health decisions for the Department of HEW.
That charge was confirmed by one former HEW official. He said he testified against the $75 million on orders from the Budget Bureau and the HEW Secretary. Actually, this official and others doubted at the time that the states would keep up childhood inoculations unless they were given the money just for that purpose. And they haven't. Ron Nesson, NBC News, Washington.
The government today refused to ban the use of DDT and a weed killer called 2,4-5-T, saying it had not been firmly established that they are health hazards. They've been under official study since last January, and the review could continue for another year. The head of the Environmental Protection Agency, William Ruckelshaus, said three other pesticides will also be brought under official review. All of this falls short of the demands of some environmentalists that all of them be banned immediately. David?
From the Census Bureau, some interesting figures today. The average American family now has to pay out about a third of its total income in taxes, federal, state, and local. That holds throughout the middle and upper income brackets. But the poorest families get the worst deal because most local taxes, sales, property, and so on, are not based on ability to pay. So the result is that the poorest families with about $2,000 income pay out half their income in taxes. The reason is that poor families have to spend every dime they make and pay sales and excise taxes on nearly all of it.
When I introduced Sears phosphate-free laundry detergent a few months ago, many people asked me why Sears detergent over any other. I said then, and I'll say again, that I feel this Sears product is a real breakthrough in the area of industrial ecology. By industrial ecology, I mean products that not only help fight pollution, but also do the kind of job American consumers have a right to expect for their money. In the case of Sears' new phosphate-free detergent, Sears has a heavy-duty laundry product that contains no phosphates to pollute our water and no MTA or enzymes either. And yet Sears detergent will still get your clothes really clean and bright. After all, what good would any detergent be, phosphates or no phosphates, if it couldn't clean your clothes efficiently? So you see, there are two good reasons for buying Sears phosphate-free laundry detergent. Clean wash for you, cleaner water for everyone.
In 4 days now, South Vietnam's troops invading Laos have fallen back by about 12 miles and have fallen back to within 15 miles of their own border, where they started. Their casualties are heavy, and American helicopters are busy flying out the wounded and battle-weary and flying in replacements. The North Vietnamese counterattacked fiercely earlier this week, and American B-52s have been sent over to attack them. South Vietnam's losses in 4 days were said to be about 120 killed. American casualties announced today were 45 killed in the last week and 156 wounded. The White House said today that despite some tactical defeats, the invasion of Laos was doing what it was meant to do, break up the communist supply line. Back at the border of South Vietnam, the casualties were coming in substantial numbers.
This is Ham Nghe, the South Vietnamese headquarters directing operations in Laos. And the ambulances were here early. It was a bad sign. They were waiting for wounded to be brought in from fire support base Lo Lo, 15 miles inside Laos. A helicopter gunship pilot who flew over Lo Lo described what he saw.
Nothing there anymore, sir, because night before last, about 7:30, we were called out on attack E. My gunships and our slicks and went out trying to resupply the Arvins on the base, and the NVA had overrun it, and the Arvins were in their bunkers, called myself up on the radio and told me just to shoot on the compound because NVA were in the wires, and it was just hopeless. They were being kicked out, and now there's no one there anymore. They're walking out. The NVA just shut them right out.
12 helicopters were sent in for the wounded, and as the first of them returned, the story of Lo Lo unfolded. The survivors told stories of savage North Vietnamese shellings and attacks, and of how the base had been overrun, and how they, the wounded, had walked, crawled, or were carried to an area where they could be picked up. Lo Lo, they said, was a disaster. No one knows how many dead or wounded there were. When asked, the survivors just kept saying, many, many. Still, these men were lucky. They told of how they had clawed their way over the bodies of others, more seriously wounded, to get to the choppers. The South Vietnamese say they're in the third and final phase of the Laos operation, and that their plans call for fire support bases like Lo Lo to be abandoned anyway as their troops are moved closer to Vietnam. But there wasn't anything orderly or planned in getting these men out. They were overrun and defeated, and all the talk of a planned withdrawal seemed pointless. The South Vietnamese were retreating. Phil Brady, NBC News, at Hamgye.
For about 2 years, Russia and China have let up a little in their verbal attacks on each other, but today they started again. The Russians said the Chinese had obstructed their aid shipments to North Vietnam and accused them of secretly working for better relations with the United States. China accused Russia of colonialism abroad and oppressing its people at home. It sounded like a discussion of morality by Bonnie and Clyde. Frank?
One of the jurors in the court-martial of Lieutenant William Kelly went to the hospital last night with a stomachache, and he was checked again today during a long break for lunch. He seems to be all right, and under military law, the five remaining jurors could return a verdict even without him. Today, the jury asked to be shown pictures taken of the My Lai massacre on that day. It also asked to have some testimony reread. The jury has been deliberating for 2 days.
The senior member of the jury is Colonel Clifford Ford. He serves as president of the panel. An infantryman, Ford served in Europe during World War II and was in Korea. In court, Ford is taciturn and has listened to the witnesses without betraying any kind of emotion. Major Charles McIntosh is a stern-looking veteran of Vietnam. The jurors were permitted to write questions, which were read to witnesses by the judge, and Major McIntosh has written more queries than the rest of the jury put together. Major Carl Beerbohm is a helicopter pilot. He spent 2 tours of duty in Vietnam. Beerbohm's aviation background was thought to be prejudicial to Kelly, since testimony from helicopter pilots has been damaging to Kelly. But the defense is now known to believe Beerbohm is favorable to the lieutenant. Major Walter Kennard is a paratrooper who arrives every day wearing his highly polished jump boots. He commanded an infantry company in Vietnam. Kennard appears to be the most military-minded of the jurors. Major Harvey Brown was with the U.S. Military Command in Vietnam. He, too, has served as commander of an infantry company. Brown is an instructor at the infantry school at Fort Benning. He was promoted from captain to major during the trial. The junior member of the jury is Captain Ronald Salem. His military background is similar to Kelly's. Both went through officer candidate school here at Fort Benning, Georgia, and both commanded infantry platoons in Vietnam, although Salem arrived there more than a year after My Lai occurred. Unlike a civilian court where the verdict must be unanimous, a military court requires only a 2/3 vote for conviction. Thus, 4 of 6 officers are necessary to find him guilty. If 3 of them believe he is innocent, he'll be set free. Robert Goralski, NBC News at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Army Chief of Staff General William Westmoreland has recommended that the commander and assistant commander of the division involved in the My Lai massacre be demoted and reprimanded. Both Major General Samuel Custer and his assistant, Brigadier General George Young, had at one time been charged with attempting to cover up the My Lai incident. The charges against Young were dropped last June, the Army saying they were unsupported by the evidence. Charges against Custer were dropped in January. The Army said he had not intentionally abrogated his responsibilities. Army Secretary Stanley Reeser will decide whether they're to be reduced in rank after they've been given a chance to be heard.
My wife's incredible. She took care of the baby all day, cooked a great dinner, and even went to a school meeting. And look at her. She looks better than any of her friends. She takes care of herself, gets her rest, does her sit-ups, watches her diet, and to make sure she gets enough iron and vitamins, she takes Geritol every morning. Makes me take it, too.
More than twice the iron of ordinary supplements, plus 7 vitamins. Take care of yourself. Take Geritol.
My wife. I think I'll keep her.
We've created a laxative like a fine old recipe with natural ingredients to help overcome constipation the most natural way. We blend a rare moisture-holding plant with ingredients from corn and oats and defatted wheat germ. Not a harsh chemical or drug in it. This natural laxative aid will help get you regular. A new development? Hardly. It's Seritan. We've been talking about nature for a long, long time.
What former President Johnson called the War on Poverty is centered in an agency called the Office of Economic Opportunity, or OEO. President Nixon has pledged to all but abolish it and give its duty and money to other agencies. But today he recommended that the OEO be extended for 2 years without change. He hopes eventually to wipe it out as part of a larger sweep to reorganize the executive branch of government. David?
An organization representing 60% of the Roman Catholic clergymen in the U.S. is meeting in Baltimore and has passed several resolutions. They voted to condemn the Vietnam War, to ask Congress to end the draft, to support Father Berrigan and those accused of plotting to kidnap Henry Kissinger, and to ask that conscientious objectors be able to object to one war without objecting to all wars. And they want to be able to marry if they want to.
The 240 delegates who came to this conference represent about 60% of the priesthood in the United States. This folk mass they celebrated was indicative of their desire to reform the church. This man, a former priest and an observer of the conference, is Thomas Durkin. He is married and has a child. At times, the conference looked like a meeting of anything but priests. Neckties, turtleneck sweaters, and non-black suits were quite popular. There was a lot of talk about the optional celibacy proposal, whether priests should be permitted to marry. Many of the priests felt the celibacy rule was largely responsible for the resignation of 25,000 priests in the last 7 years. And so, when the issue went to the floor, the debate was crucial.
If we are to be leaders, in fact, of a crucified Christ, I say let us lead, and let us do more than we must. Celibacy is a gift to God. Marriage is good. Giving this special gift to God, I say, with many priests of my acquaintance and speaking for many priests in our country, celibacy is better.
The point we're at, the problem of celibacy, is probably one of the most important problems that we're considering here. And I think the fact that the way it's worded now leaves the resolution weak and rather undefined. And I think that's probably because we're afraid to offend the group here and maybe even the bishops.
The vote came long after midnight, and the results were overwhelmingly in favor of reversing the church's stand.
238 delegates voting, 212 in favor, 23 opposed, and 3 abstentions.
The statement on celibacy in the priesthood adopted at this conference ended with a quotation. It was not from a modern thinker, but from the Old Testament, the book of Ecclesiastes. And it reads, "There is an appointed time for everything. A time to build and a time to tear down, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to be silent and a time to speak." The priests here have added that the time is now. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News in Baltimore.
The secret to a great cup of coffee is to keep the flavor and aroma sealed in the bean until you buy it. Freshly ground coffee is flavor fresh. For really great coffee, buy A&P Whole Bean Coffee. It's freshly ground in the store when you buy it. Try 8 O'Clock, a superb blend of 100% Brazilian coffees. Bean fresh coffee makes a world of difference. Enjoy some soon. 8 O'Clock Coffee is freshly ground only at A&P and A&P's A-Mart food stores.
You work hard all your life. Where does it get you? In the back, in the neck, in the shoulders. What are you going to do? Absorbine Junior. Absorbine Junior's hard-working medicines increase circulation where you put it on. Penetrating heat gets deep into aching muscles in just minutes. Oh, that feels so good. Get Absorbine Junior. Absorbine Junior works as hard as you do. You know, you're a good husband.
I work in an automobile engine. It's dirty work, so I need a strong detergent. Because if I'm not careful, grime will form on my spring and plunger. And should grime form on my spring and plunger, I might stick, which can reduce mileage in the engine where I work. So I use Mobil. It helps keep me clean, and I just love its gentle fragrance.
Use Mobil detergent gasoline.
It cleans your anti-pollution valve as you drive.
Trumpeter Louis Armstrong is in critical condition with a heart ailment in a New York City hospital. The FBI is said to be making good progress in tracking down whoever bombed the U.S. Capitol, but is not yet ready for any arrests. Representative John Dow, a New York Democrat, figures to save some trees by using recycled papers in his office. That is, new paper reclaimed from old paper. And he put in a bill today requiring the federal government to do the same. The federal government buys 400,000 tons of paper a year. We do not know how many acres of trees have to be felled to print, for example, the tax forms. In Britain, 2 million workers put on a 24-hour general strike protesting the proposed new labor law. The new law they are mad about says that once labor and management have agreed on a contract and signed it, both must abide by it. North Vietnam is said to have stated in private that neither it nor the U.S. will ever be able to win a military victory. The stock markets rose a little today. On the New York Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials gained almost 3 points, and an average share rose 5 cents. On the American, an average share gained 6 cents. Frank?
In northern Illinois, there are 13 miles of twisting tracks called the LaSalle and Bureau County Railroad. It makes stops at LaSalle, Midway, Hegler, LaSalle Junction, and Ladd. Well, early last year, the Penn Central Railroad began noticing that when some of its freight cars were routed onto the LaSalle and Bureau County's tracks, they often didn't come back. Today, a federal attorney, Louis Bechtel, said the FBI had seized the LaSalle's records, which show that 277 of the Penn Central's freight cars have been stolen, repainted, and their numbers changed. Now, that's $1 million worth of freight cars that, if hooked up end-to-end, as freight cars often are, would cover three of the LaSalle's and Bureau County's entire 13 miles of track. Good night, David.
Good night, Frank. Thank you. And good night for NBC News.